you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zacharin. I'm the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire. I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, an editor at The Plunge.
Hello.
Hello. And we're really excited today about our guest. We've been hoping to have this guy on for a very long time.
Long time.
Before we even had a podcast.
Yeah, probably. We were like, we should launch a podcast and then eventually have Joe Pera on.
It was like a long con. For 2 years we did this just so we can get him on. Before we get to that, I want to get to our patented news segment this weekend. I won't have a name for it, but it's the news segment.
The news.
The news. And now on this week's segment of the news, we have Annalisa Filion. She is the creator, director, mastermind behind Looking for Leia, the new documentary about Star Wars fandom and the women in it. It is now on Sci-Fi Wire and Sci-Fi VOD. Going to talk about, you might have guessed it, Star Wars. Annalise, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? I love mastermind. I feel very sissy. I feel like I should have a robe or something back here and be cackling.
I mean, if you can bust out a cackle or two, it'd be great for the soundboard.
I'm clearly so, like, I bleed orange. So, like, I said that, and I was like, I can't back that up.
Well, so look, we are, you know, this is going to come out on Monday, but we are now just the Rise of Skywalker is out a few hours now, maybe a day. What did you think?
Yeah, so I saw it last night, and I had everything muted. I'll say first, I had everything muted for like a week, right? Because I had to work social media for Looking for Leia. And so unmuting my timeline last night was like this deluge of everybody's feelings. I will say that this one wasn't my Star Wars. But, you know, in a way, like, that's okay. I haven't actually had a miss with a Star Wars in the kind of modern era of it. So I feel like, statistically speaking, I'm still doing great. And I have a couple DMs going on with women that worked with me on Looking for Leia. And they have been sort of my, like, therapy space. Because one of the things that I loved the most about working on Looking for Leia was getting to hear people talk about things that they loved, especially things that I didn't love. And so I found myself this morning when I woke up having like not loved it, really wanting to hear from folks who did and being like, okay, tell me what worked for you, because it can be easy to kind of get into a negative spiral with stuff. And so my first thing this morning was to hop into this DM and be like, all right, I'm not here to yuck anybody's yum. I want to hear about the stuff that really worked for you, because I know the stuff that didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And that's what's kind of great about a story like Star Wars, I think, is that there's just so much there. And there's just a lot to engage with and interact with.
You know, for me, I've seen it twice. I went to a press screening and then saw it last night again with my fiance. And, you know, knowing the twists, and I think the twist or the big revelation is kind of the thing that a lot of people have, or one of the things that a lot of people have issues with, and certainly it was not my favorite twist or revelation or parentage revelation, to make it a Jerry Springer type thing.
Oh my God. That's it too, isn't it? That's what it felt like.
There was a lot of fun stuff in there and stuff I can really appreciate and love. And that's what Looking for Leia is all about to some degree. Yeah. Super Star Wars fans who grew up with it, love it, and make it such a big part of their lives. So tell us a little bit about the documentary. Now that it's complete and out on Sci-Fi, I know we had you on the show a while ago, but now it's ready to discuss and to be seen by everyone.
Yeah, it feels like it's been such a long time in coming. We're so grateful to all the folks that kind of stayed with us over the, you know, essentially, you know, close to 3 years that it took to actually get it on screen. And of course, in that 3 years, so much has changed within Star Wars. But then I think one of the things that's really great about the series, and I'm feeling extra good this morning, for instance, looking back on this thing I created and being able to be like, yeah, you know what, this ages really well. And a part of why it does that is that the source material is really timeless stuff. So Looking for Leia is a 7-part mini docu-series. The episodes are like 12 to 15 minutes each. So they're very viewer friendly. You don't have to take off time work to binge it. About women and also non-binary fans of the galaxy far, far away. And I'd say it's really a series about the ways that fandom represents a kind of alchemy, the way that we take a source material and then we spin it into something new. So we've got episodes on women who are behind print fanzines of the 1970s through early 90s, women who are droid builders. There's an episode on the Navajo translation of A New Hope as a language preservation episode, language preservation effort, which is one of my favorite episodes that really shows the way, we turn these stories into the things that we need. We've got episodes that are around on-screen representation and also sort of the stereotypes and also generative ways, maybe less visible ways that particularly women's fandom will show up in the world. And then, of course, there's a sort of tribute episode to Carrie Fisher and the Princess Leia character that's anchored by a singular story around the sort of creation of a senatorial Leia gown that I particularly, again, love. All of it just gives us a vantage point into fandom that is not from the group that is typically centered in these conversations, and also really shows the diversity of experiences within that group, because, of course, women are not a monolithic group, and, of course, gender doesn't really work cleaning on a binary, and so there's just a lot of voices, and even with as many voices as there are, we're really aware that for every person on screen, there's like 100,000 out in the world.
You know, one thing that really struck me, a lot of things about this thing that struck me, but you said you started it 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if you're force sensitive or something, but to know the way the conversation was going to change in terms of Star Wars, during those 3 years is pretty incredible. Obviously, you know, to have it like that conversation develop so much as you're making this. So that's why it feels so fresh to me.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I am a clinical psychologist by trade, and I'm a documentarian by profession. And one would hope that I have developed some decent observational skills in the course of these two jobs. But early on in the interviews, it became very aware. I became very aware of the fact that I wanted to stay off of character analysis or story critique, in part because that is the subjective territory on which we read ourselves into the films. Those are incredibly personal, right? We often connect with these stories in ways that are really linked to our own vulnerabilities, our own identity. And so there's multiple truths in that. And people's truths are just that. They're actual. They're deeply held. They can be the source of a lot of passion. And they can be diametrically opposed to someone else's truth. And they both get to coexist. And anytime we're just deeply tucking into someone's, like, this character motivations are this and the plot means this, it can kind of narrow conversation, because then it's like, okay, great, I know your truth and my truth might be different, and where do we go from there? So we try to stay on much more meta themes that are around sort of like, what function does this play in your life? How does it show up? How do you use it? And those conversations, I think we don't have as often about fandom. And I do think those conversations are timeless. And so it's nice to say, like, if you love The Rise of Skywalker and it felt like such a celebratory and joyous and fun kind of punctuation mark on the Skywalker saga, you're going to love Looking for Leia. It's going to give you a lot of things there that is everything you love about fandom. And if you had complicated or disappointed feelings coming out of The Rise of Skywalker, you're going to love Looking for Leia, because it's going to remind you of all the reasons why you love Star Wars as a fan and what fandom really brings to our lives. And so it feels great to know that regardless of our connection to the various materials, and at this point, 43 years worth of media, there's a lot to love. There's a lot to maybe not connect with. The themes of fandom are, I think, so broad that there's room for all of us.
Right. Well, so people can get it online, Sci-Fi Wire and Sci-Fi VOD, 7 episodes. Thank you so much for doing this. Really excited for it.
Thank you so much.
So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we are very excited. Joe is the titular star of Joe Parra Talks With You on Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
Also a comedian. We've seen his show many times throughout New York, different places. Bell House most recently, right?
Yeah, I've seen your show with Dan Licata a few times, and I recently brought Jordan to see it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We saw one, the one you do with, I think, Connor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Connor O'Malley.
Yeah.
So yeah, we saw it at the Bell House. We were super excited that we're finally getting you on the show here. Thing we do at the beginning of every show is we talk about our week.
Okay.
The most, the geekiest thing, the most fun thing, whatever it is, the thing we are most excited about this week. We'll talk, so give you a little feeling how it works, although it's pretty self-explanatory.
It's pretty simple, but right, okay.
Emily, what's the most fun / geeky thing this week?
The most fun thing is so you and I played Dungeons & Dragons together, and I'm about to hand over the campaign to a different Dungeon Master, which means I get to create an original character. So I've been working on a character and coming up with what she's going to look like.
Tell us about the character.
So she's a race called Tieflings, which is long time ago, humans in their lineage had a romance with demons. So Ooh. She's like somewhat demon, and she has horns, and she's also a bard, which means her primary function in an adventuring group is to sing and inspire the rest of the group.
Is that going to happen throughout our game?
Yeah, it depends on what our dungeon master wants me to do it as, but I have this idea that she sounds like a death metal singer because she's part demon.
Joe is an initial choir teacher, so maybe he can give you some lessons.
Yeah.
For me, I saw the most recent Star Wars a couple of days ago, but before that, I watched like the last 5 movies in a row, kind of back to back to back to back, and to get myself ready. So that was fun. And then also we played D&D. Mm-hmm. That was fun. I've been actually designing my character. He already exists in real life, but been designing him on Hero Forge. So I've been playing around. It's hard to make them look old.
Sell him to Joe.
Yeah.
What's
so my
concept?
Character is a half elf named Eugenifer Delph. Everyone just calls him Delph.
Mm-hmm.
And he is basically if Bernie Sanders lived in the forest or was scavenging for himself.
Yeah.
So I spend the entire time talking like Bernie might, but as a half elf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is he running for office in the D&D games? Or
he's trying to instigate a populist revolution of sorts.
He's preoccupied with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never played D&D before, but I was under the impression you did like there's a quest, and I guess I'm a little confused as to where your characters fit in.
So was I. This was my first time ever playing. Emily brought me into the group,
really?
I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. So you can kind of, it's more like open world, like you do anything you want.
Mm-hmm. It's kind like of. Playing pretend as adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just kind of collaboratively do it. And sometimes, so Jordan's a player, and I'm the dungeon master. And he often asks questions that you're kind of not supposed to ask. He's like,
oh, really?
Did you just make that up?
But I don't know. Because it's strange because you can do anything, but there's also so many strict rules about what can and can't be done.
Yeah.
So that's what confuses me. Like, all right, Jordan, now what do you want to do? Anything or nothing? I don't know what I'm allowed to do.
Right. That seems fair.
Yeah. So I'm very confused.
Did you get mad at him?
No. No, but an awkward silence falls on the table when that happens.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm always like demanding to know who the bad guys are working for and if they're getting health insurance out of the deal.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which seems in character.
Yeah. Like they have, what was it? One of your characters had horrible acid burns on their faces.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, did you see that at the workplace? Was that an accident? Were you compensated for it? So.
And we let him do those monologues, and then we move on with the plot.
I'm not good at playing, but I'm good at pretending to be Bernie Sanders.
And that's okay. Interesting to know that you kind of just do that as part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm allowed to go just be annoying for like 3 to 4 hours per week.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe, what was the most fun thing you did this week?
I mean, I went on Seth Meyers' show on Tuesday night, and that was very fun.
Yeah.
And Robert De Niro was there, and I asked the producer if it would be all right if I went and said hello. And I did, and I just said hello, and then my dad was there, and he was freaking out a little bit, too, because we didn't tell him in advance. We wanted it to be like a surprise, and then he was just sitting across the hall, kind of like trying to catch a glimpse of what Robert was up to. And it was like better than the segment on the show, really, just watching my dad, like, because he actually watched Irishman 2 times the week up, not up leading up to it, just not knowing that Robert was going to be there. And that was very funny. So my dad got to meet him too. And I don't know, that was kind of a highlight. Also, going on the show and some friends and family were there, so I don't know. It's kind of hard to top that.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that's pretty hard to top. That's Irishman twice is a big time commitment.
I don't know what's going on with my dad enough that he had 8 hours this week to do that, but I hope he's all right.
I watched it once this past weekend. I think I watched it on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I did not meet. It's the funny thing is that they're all here, right? They're in 30 Rock. I never meet any of them.
Well, there's a lot of, I don't know. Yeah, does your mom and dad wonder if you like hang out with Jimmy Fallon, or you just wonder, because right, this is how my parents think. Why, yes. Why don't you just say hello on the way in? You must see him all the time or while you're eating lunch. Jim Fallon hangs out at lunchtime waiting for people to talk to him.
No,
he's planning games for tonight.
he's in a game planning session.
I have an uncle in Canada that I was visiting with once, and I told him that I had moved to New York City, and he said, with no sense of humor, he was like, have you met Steven Seagal? That was his first New York question.
Well, yeah. Does your uncle live in a bunker?
I was like, no.
Yeah.
He's just like a rural guy. He probably that's his favorite actor.
Wow.
I guess.
What would he have done if you said yes?
Mm-hmm.
You can, well, is that a lie that's okay?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what would the fallout be if you found out?
Well, you just kind of have to keep it going. Like, yeah, I'm sure if you gave me a letter for Steven, I'm sure he'd write back. I give it to him. And then you just have to write fake letters from Steven to your uncle. But I think it would probably make him very happy.
I feel like you were very quick on the draw with that con. Have you done this before?
No.
I'd like to imagine that your dad was already thinking he was pen pals Robert De Niro. So how was your dad's interaction with Robert?
It was nice, and we just said hello, and I told my dad he could do anything except for, quote, the Robert De Niro's own lines back to him. So he didn't do that, but we didn't want to bother him too much. It was just nice to meet the guy, and yeah, that's it.
I interviewed Robert De Niro once a long time ago. He was a very quiet guy.
Really?
I interviewed him. Well, it was for the Tribeca Film Festival, which he helped start, and he did it with the person he ran it with, this woman, Jane Rosenthal, and she spoke maybe 95% of the time. He was just sitting there like, yeah.
I heard he's kind of a private guy, which I understand.
Sure. I wonder if, now that you're in the second year of your show, people might be wondering if they moved to New York, if they met you.
I don't know.
Well, you shoot the show. The first season, I don't know about the second season, was in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh. Right? About a little bit in Michigan and then a little bit in Milwaukee.
So when you bring all these people there, is that like a big deal, to have this show shoot there?
Yeah. I think it's nice. I mean, not in the way that people know what's going on or who we are. Most people still don't even know what the show is. And I want them to watch it, but I understand it's kind of a little bit niche thing. But it's nice because a lot of the crew there, they don't have like longer term projects, like the bigger films and television shows. I guess the story that I heard was that they had a tax credit in Wisconsin. So a lot of movies were going through there, and then the movie Public Enemy starring Johnny Depp went there, and it was they basically used the tax incentive to the fullest. The producers all bought SUVs for themselves to take home on the tax credit as part of the production, and then I guess justifiably Wisconsin said, okay, that's it, we don't want that anymore. So a lot of the stuff is like, in independent films, there's some production, a lot of commercials, a lot of people, a lot of the crew makes a good deal of money just doing Packers commercials because Green Bay is an hour and a half away. Huh. So it's nice that we're able to kind of be like a 30, 40, 28 days of the first season, 40 days of shooting the second season because we did more episodes. And yeah, it's nice to kind of work with the same people, and I think they appreciate, being on the same thing as opposed to doing a bunch of smaller things.
Yeah.
Did you storyboard out your character's environment, you know, his home, or did you scout and say that's the house?
That's a good question. It's a lot of, we don't build sets. We don't have that kind of a budget. And also it's neater to use real places and real school restaurants and houses. So a lot of the times we'll have some idea going into it. And like when I write the script, but then we'll do a scout. The DP will take photographs, and then sometimes even we'll block it out with the with me and Marty Scousbo, the director. We'll do like a walkthrough, and we'll think of like even more gags while we're doing it. And because I think it's fun to kind of you think of things that you never would have before. If there's like a doorway in the background, or I'm trying to think of other stuff. I don't know, like, I don't know, say that there's a stubborn door down to the basement or like a gate that won't open. That's fun to add another layer of joke to it with. But kind of, well, that'll be a step, and then we'll take photographs, and then we'll storyboard that way once we know what the location is.
Cool.
What I love about the show, I mean, there's many things, but you know, the idea is that you are Joe Pera, the person, a comedian who lives here. But the character Joe Pera is a choir teacher in Michigan, right?
Huh.
And the idea is that it's kind of a small town life in a way. You're hosting a TV show maybe, or just kind of talking to the camera that is not for a TV show, but speaking to the audience. But I'm from here. I'm much of a very city person. This is probably, this is the only show that's actually made me like, oh, Midwest, and like life looks nice. And fun. I have like a fondness for it that I wouldn't have really developed, like a suburban quiet life that I mm-hmm. haven't really developed otherwise.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. It's set in Marquette, Michigan, which is 20,000 people, and we chose it for a lot of reasons. But I really like shooting in Milwaukee because we get to live there for three, this time kind of almost 4 months. And so it's like I get to hang out in Milwaukee for a while, and it's very nice because it feels a little bit like where I grew up in Buffalo too.
Mm.
Oh, Buffalo, New York, you grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you want to, you know, make a show kind of in that sort of setting, that kind of Americana quiet setting?
There's a lot of reasons. One, I guess it felt close to home, but also something that we could put our own ideas on, and you know, a way that. Sometimes in your own hometown, you get too bogged down by the realities and the people you know, and also your own memories, that it's kind of opens up more possibilities to have done it in a different place. But I think it's just, I guess it's a little, I didn't want to do a show where I was just another, you know, a show by a comedian about a comedian. That's mm-hmm. This would be terrible. So I thought I went to school with a lot of people who were studying music education, and I'd been in choir a lot growing up. So I just figured, like, what if instead of a comedian, I had become a choir teacher, mm-hmm. and also, you know, remained in Buffalo or moved somewhere else like Marquette, and that's kind of where everything grew from.
Mm. It's kind of the alternate version of your life.
Kind of like what would have, you know, and then it's like what would have happened if I did this instead, and yeah, that's kind of where it draws from. Plus a lot of all the writers are from Chicago or Buffalo. Like my best friend Dan writes on the show, and you've seen the show, mm-hmm. and so yeah, we've known each other since high school, so we're able to, it's just a lot of ideas and stuff just come from where we're from, and since we're all from the Midwest or Rust Belt, it kind of made sense to you know, that's kind of came together that way.
It's so fun as an audience member to watch you and Dan perform together, because you have like different energies, but you seem to feed off one another. Was that always the case?
Yeah, like, we've been performing together since I think we did we started making stuff when we were in high school and then seriously in college, but it kind of figured itself out over time. We just performed together so much on stage. And for a while, it was actually kind of tough because our humor is so different in a way. And so, there's a lot of similarities, but in other ways, like Dan, as you've seen his joke where he said every, it's okay. I'll just, like, every Christmas I take a shower with my dad. It's like, I can't tell that joke.
Yeah.
Well, he just told it pretty well.
I guess I wouldn't, but I wouldn't do it in my stand-up. But I do love the fact that he can.
Yeah.
And I think that the two balances of me not telling that joke and probably never telling a joke like that and standing next to him as he tells that joke is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny for a while when Dan and I were starting out and neither of us had, it wasn't a profession yet for us. His parents at least liked the fact that I didn't talk about that type of stuff on stage. Like Dan, when we did a show in Buffalo, and Dan said that his mom hooked up with Paul Simon and did the joke about taking a shower with his dad in front of all of his dad's friends, and, which is so funny. But his dad would always tell my dad, "I wish Joe could do or Dan could do stand up more like Joe." Which is not, it just took his dad longer time to appreciate what Dan does.
How did your parents how do they like your stand up, and how do they come to appreciate the stuff that you do?
Yeah, I think they like it. It was always kind of, as long as I'm not using drugs, I should pursue whatever I want to try and do that. But it definitely didn't come from a background where being like a comedian was a viable job option or something. So it's just, they've been pretty supportive, but also a little bit worried about whether it would work. Yeah.
Sure.
I feel like our parents feel that way about us, and we're not doing anything that risky.
I think just the fact that
I've
made money on the internet the entire time I've been an adult. Like, my parents just don't even try to understand what it is.
Yeah.
But that's a peaceful thing. It's like, you know, you seem okay. That's
yeah.
When did you decide that you wanted to come down and give it a shot?
When Dan and I were writing jokes since high school together. Mm-hmm. So we were on a, when we were in, we went to college at the same place, and we were on they had like a public access TV, so we were able to do that in short films. And then when I graduated, it seemed like the next step, because we'd done stand-up comedy in Buffalo a bunch when we would go home for breaks, and it was nice, but you could see like it was very hard to make a living off of it or make a career out of it there. So it was just, but the bullet moved.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a generalization because I haven't seen every program on Adult Swim, but I've seen a lot of them. It feels like yours is on the gentler side of the spectrum. What's your relationship with Adult Swim? Like, do they just let you have complete creative control or?
No. But I think they're very, I think it took like a bunch of the first season and the projects before that. I did the animation called Joe Parra Talks You to Sleep. Mm-hmm. And they've been trusting the whole time that it would be good. And they've given really good notes about how to, when it does need fixes, they do offer really good ideas and makes the show better. But they kind of do support, I guess, any person who has a strong kind of comedic perspective, mm-hmm. and lets them run with it in whichever direction and supports that. And I think that that's why their shows have such strong specific feels and types of humor to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we both have watched the show, the first season, definitely even the second season, what's come out so far multiple times. And,
cool.
You know, the first time I watched it, I was very interested and obsessed kind of like with the very specific language of it, you know, because the way things were worded always cracked me up. But I think we both like been discovering different plot threads and
it definitely emerge. Yields more information as you watch it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it a million times yourself, but
no, that's great. I appreciate it because I mean, we want it to be something that you can watch, you know, once and really just enjoy it. But then there are 11-minute episodes, so you just kind of make it as dense as possible and put as many visual jokes and lines that could be revisited or whatever. I don't know. I guess it's kind of started with the Christmas special and the sleep special. They did a Christmas special about how to pick out the perfect Christmas tree, and I guess it's always just been a goal to, you know, make something that could be watched every Christmas with that, and it's nice every time, same as you watch, I don't know, Christmas Story or Muppets Christmas, and same with the sleep special. I hope people can enjoy it over and over again, and same goal for the series. So
I like the idea of watching their Christmas tree special all throughout Christmas Story, 24 hours. And since it's like 10 minutes, you could watch it like 24 hours and
200 times.
Yeah, something like that, 200 times, which would be amazing.
That's true.
Keep it on rotation.
Yeah, that'd be cool if they just watch it once, but every year.
200 times would be great. Well, Emily and I, we've become like, you know, I was saying we were like taking notes as we were watching this.
Yeah.
I was looking at my phone and you're finding, like, I was watching the first time you meet Sarah, Joe Firestone's character, and she talks about, artificial intelligence, who will be the first to dance, she's very paranoid about that. She's paranoid about you sitting in the parking lot. And now we see in the episode where you plant in the new season, you plant your bean arch. She's carrying a gun now. And so we're noticing these 10 minute episodes, but these slight character progressions over time. I'm very into.
Yeah. Thanks.
Is it fun to plot out we're going to reveal a little more of this person?
I mean, with the 11 minute episodes, it's kind of like that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. So you, I don't know, give every detail you can in the costume or the lines. I mean, like, just the lines have to do so much in terms of building a character. You know, if one new person walks in the middle of the episode, they have, you know, two lines. How do you build them out as fast as possible? So, hopefully they could be remembered and revisited a couple episodes later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember Connor, when he has the perfect egg bite in the family restaurant, not diner.
Yeah.
He says he really needs a win right now. Now we're all this time later, things aren't looking so good for him and Sarah.
I love the tension in their marriage, like, unfolding.
Yeah.
It's cool.
We have fan theories about the show now. Because so much of our job here at Sci-Fi is, you know, trying to come up with fan theories about Star Wars or, you know, what's going to happen next. But we've decided instead we're going to, there's questions, lingering questions, you know. Mike and Sue's child, Kelsey, on the New Year's Eve episode, she's very fixated on drinking a beer. And so, you know, I wonder what kind of damage Mike is doing to her. You know, like, what is the background of Mike as a father?
Good point. Driving his kids to drink. No, I think deep down, Mike is a good dad who cares. He just doesn't have a ton of patience.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because he's working a lot, and just, you know, he shows he cares about them in other ways. Like, he took them out for breakfast in episode 2, but probably yells at them the entire time. But also, they probably get some bad behavior from the parents.
Mm. Yeah. He teaches them to stand their ground, which is
I think that's a good point, though, because he's still, even though he's being rowdy and like maybe inappropriate, he's still playing with the kids in the yard, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not a villain. That's kind of a cool setup.
No.
Well, you have a theory about Mike and Sarah, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that Sarah's...
Not Mike and Sue, sorry.
Yeah, Sue. I think that Sue would get along with Sarah. That makes sense to me. Because of that conversation your character has about the grid fallout and how it's going to come within our lifetime.
Oh.
The threads are coming together.
Yeah.
I see Mike and Sarah's potentially. They're both... There's a paranoia there.
Yeah, I think the two of them have more in common. They have a lot in common, and I think that me, my character, and Sue Melski have a lot in common yeah, I think there's a lot of potential, but like, I think I see in the future, like I could see Mike and Sarah sitting down and having like a long conversation together where I like Mike and Joe, he's still fairly annoyed with them most of the time and same. And I think, yeah, I just think that the personalities match up.
Mm-hmm. I'm also personally, you know, I know you got you and Gene, the cameraman here at Late Night, yeah, but also your best friend on the show.
Uh-huh.
The power dynamic there is troubling to me. He does not invite him to the Over Easy's breakfast.
Oh.
He's New Year's Eve, he just tells him about his underwear, but doesn't invite him out.
Yeah.
I worry about the power dynamic between Joe and Gene.
He thinks that Gene is bullying Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely not. I think they've got their own friend groups. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure.
On New Year's, we talked about, like, no, I think it was just Gene was with his wife on New Year's, and he could not invite Joe because Lulu and Joe don't, yeah.
Yeah, she tells him not to come to breakfast.
Yeah, so she, his wife is annoyed by my character a little bit, and yeah, so I just don't think we talked about, well, why isn't Joe hanging out with Gene on New Year's? But that's why.
Right.
You know, you got to spend it with, well, I guess you don't have to do anything, but is sometimes you may get in trouble if you don't spend it with your significant other.
That is true. Sure. I mean, Kelsey asking, why aren't you with the other adults, to me was one of the great lines
of
our season.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
There's a, you know, it's a very joyful show, I think we can agree, but there's an underlying sadness there, I think, to the show. Would you say that, or do you think Joe, the character, has to get his life in order and it's becoming happier?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, I'll let the audience kind of make their own decisions on that, but I think as the second season takes place during the summertime, his relationship with Sarah is going well. I think he warms up a little bit too, and I think he's a little more talkative and excited about things. And like in the first episode, he wants to do the grow a bean arch, and it's a big project that maybe he wouldn't have attempted before that, but I think he's opening up a little bit because of her.
I liked the energy of him zoning out and thinking about Dragon Ball Z Super. Is that from you? Were you watching that when you were putting it together?
When we were shooting the first season, I was really tired after the shoots, and you know, just I wanted something. For some reason, they were airing the new Dragon Ball Supers, and you could get the new ones without with subtitles, but not dubbed on YouTube for free. I'm sorry. I should watch it, but they were putting them online. They were putting them on YouTube. What could I do? So no, I just somehow.
No one's upset. We get it.
I know it's not good though.
Are you a sub or dub guy? More of a sub.
No, I like I like sub.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so I just kind of like lay there, kind of like half zoned out. But it was so fun to watch. This is complete opposite of our show and all. You know, why not? And then I started watching other older episodes. It was just kind of like something that got my. It was just fun to watch, and I could at the end of every shoot week, they'd be on YouTube every Friday or Saturday.
Do you have a favorite character from that roundup, from that show?
There's a lot of, there's so many characters over the course of Dragon Ball Super. I don't know. Beerus is really, I don't know. Him, it's weird how well that show works comedically. Sometimes like him and Whis's relationship is really just like, really silly. I don't know. Zeno, he's pretty goofy. I thought that was a very funny thing, a funny choice. I'm trying to think. I haven't seen it in a while,
sure,
since a year. But yeah, I remember when they introduced him, that was really funny, and I love how, actually, he's probably my favorite because every time that he comes on, all the other characters react real big, like, oh!
Are you a big anime fan, generally?
Not huge. I've watched probably the more popular ones, but they haven't, I don't know that much.
That's about where we are.
Yeah.
We've had anime fanatic guests on who have asked us, and we say that we're medium.
We know what is popular. We know some of those things. I wouldn't say we're, I mean, you probably know more than me.
I'm super into a few shows, I really liked Full Metal Alchemist. Have you ever seen it? It's really good. Story's really good. Sailor Moon is my, like, when I was a kid, that was like formative years.
Mm-hmm. And Inuyasha.
And Inuyasha is a recent one. So yeah, I do like a lot of anime.
I've been really into One Punch Man, I think is the funniest.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of just a really bored superhero. It's all too easy for him, and he's bummed out. He's not my speed. that one is that one. I kind of blaze through that one.
Yeah,
so many anime, it can get a little depressing. You know, like I was watching
Cowboy Bebop's depressing.
I love Cowboy Bebop though. Yeah. Are you gonna see Star Wars this weekend? Do you think?
Mm-mm.
I'm sorry,
it's okay. It's okay.
You don't have to apologize.
It's okay. There's so much hype. I kind of tuned out of the new ones.
Yeah.
No, like I got me in trouble.
No. Yeah. Well, actually, Bob Iger's outside. The new one's not. It's okay. It's not great.
Really?
Yeah. It's all right.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm seeing it tonight. So
you won't. You'll be missing out on a ton.
Yeah. The reviews haven't been great.
I'm more excited for Cats. That's the one I'm more excited about.
I read a review for that this morning.
Yeah.
I don't want to go in on Cats, but
no, I'm very excited. I think we're going to embrace the campiness of it
for sure.
You know,
yeah, I guess. Do you really want to see James Corden flop around as a cat skin?
I guess so. We're already committed.
Yeah.
Did you know that all the characters they did them in CGI? All the effects are digital, but James Corden insisted on skinning live cats himself.
Wow.
Yes, every time he insisted on new cat skin every shoot day too.
What a cruel man.
Yeah, so I think they just said 40,000 cats died because Corden insisted on it.
How many costume changes did he need?
I guess like every day they couldn't use them twice after they took them off of the makeup.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's all. And now the blood is on the hands of every movie ticket holder, really.
It's true.
Jeez.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah. And what I understand about that is that what happens is that he had it sewed to his own skin. And so when they would take it off, it would be too bloody. And
God.
Yeah.
We agreed to see it together this morning and you didn't think to mention that.
Well, I read about that recently. it is incredible to me that this movie is coming out and it costs $100 million. Yeah.
Well, probably the talent costs probably a good chunk of that alone.
Yeah.
Sure.
Digital. What would you do on Joe Parra Talks With You if you had a budget like that? What would that look like?
I mean, we have a budget of $100 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess that's because Gene is all CGI. The digital creation.
Uh-huh. Yep. And all my sweaters are $5 million each.
Wow.
And you throw them out as soon as the shoot's over.
Uh-huh.
Made from human fur.
Oh, gosh.
So there's half a season left of the show or so. There's 13 episodes.
Airing.
Yeah, more than that. Only four have aired so far.
Oh, really?
So it's exciting. All January, every Friday night, there'll be two episodes a night. And I don't know. I really think if you've watched the first season, I'm excited for you to see where the places it goes and how hopefully I think the episodes change and get better. And we just started figuring out ways how to tell this. We didn't want any of them to seem quite the same. So we changed up all the way that we told it. Just slightly. I don't think we changed the tone of the show, but I do think that if you like it, I think it grows in a neat way.
Mm-hmm. So it does feel to me like it's expanding. I mean, I've only seen four or five episodes at this point, but one thing I wanted to mention, I, I like that your character is drawn to older people a lot. You seem to have like a familiarity there. Is that from your life, or have you had older friends a lot as you've?
Yeah, I grew up for about within 5 minutes. I had all four grandparents until I turned 20.
Whoa.
And they both sets lived within 5 minutes. So I would see them one set about once a week, and then the other set a couple times a week.
Mm.
And then, yeah, so there's a lot of the grandparents, and I was pretty lucky. And I think I get a bunch of my humor from them and my interest from them. And a lot of that.
I love the line in the premiere where you say your grandfather was a better Joe Pera than you.
Yeah, that's based on real life.
Well, what's interesting is that in the show, you never discussed your parents, you know, and it's led me to believe that perhaps there is a some sort of like magical element of the character Joe Pera. There's no parents.
Well, don't we see the dad in the salon episode?
I thought that was a grandfather, though. Was that?
Yeah, oh. That's my grandfather.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious choice to just skip a generation on the show?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Cool.
I met I reunited with an older gentleman today that I've been... I live on the...
You want to explain that one?
So that sounds awkward. I live on the Upper East Side, like very far east. And I used to go to this gym. It was a community gym called Asphalt Green. And they had a pool that I would swim in. And this guy, Ed, he did a little swimming, but he mostly really liked the steam room. Mm-hmm. From what I understand from our conversations, he would be there early morning and I'd be before work.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point they shut down the steam room. They were doing repairs.
Uh-huh.
They were redoing the whole men's locker room. And during that period, I moved 10 blocks south. And so I joined a closer gym that didn't have the pool. So, you know, Ed and I had become close. He knew that I went to Syracuse, and I knew that he worked for 18 years in some sort of bureaucratic job at Police Plaza. We were friendly.
Was he a cop?
He wasn't a cop.
Oh.
But he worked in schools, and then he worked later on at Police Plaza.
He wouldn't tell you what he did.
Yeah,
it was something with paper. He wasn't harassing
so
anyone.
Broad.
Yeah. And so I don't know. Maybe he was a desk jockey because he murdered some kids. I don't know.
God.
But then, you know, just distance keeps people apart, and I moved on. And then today I joined this new gym. It was even closer to my apartment. I'm a big gym hopper, apparently. And all of a sudden I see Ed in a towel downstairs in the locker room.
Hey, this is great. Did you say hello?
Yeah, he recognized me, and he remembered that I went to Syracuse. We talked about some of the racial problems there as I was getting changed.
God.
he brought it up. Emily believes that he may be a ghost.
I think it's a little weird that of all the gyms, do you know where he lives?
Somewhere around me, I guess.
He followed you to the next gym,
yeah.
I guess. I asked if Jordan had ever seen him exit a room, or does he just appear?
No, I've never seen him outside of the locker room.
Well, I mean...
It holds up a little.
Thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, Emily thinks he may be haunting me. I can appreciate the kinship with older folk. We were also wondering, because Emily's big into astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And
clearly,
her old friend,
ghosts and astrology.
Your old friend.
Oh, yeah. My primary friendship with an older woman is my grandmother's best friend is a woman named Miss Brenda. And she's a Texan, and she's very into astrology. And she will call me on occasion to tell me that something is notable in my star chart.
Really?
Yeah. And when I said this to Jordan, he said that sounded stressful, but...
Yeah, someone to call me, tell you just like vaguely, you may have to worry about something. I couldn't quite tell you. It would freak me out.
No, but because she's very encouraging, and it's almost like an affirmation of, you know, if things have felt difficult lately, this is a reason why.
The stars.
Yeah, the stars. I take it from your laughter that you're not into astrology.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not either.
Sorry.
But Emily says that she watches her friend's star charts.
I do, yeah.
But you never warned me of anything.
Well, because I think that you would bristle.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So she's just keeping an eye out on what the stars say for me.
Yeah.
So I guess if I like get hit by a car, you'd be like, well, you didn't have a great, ominous star chart.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'll become someone's Miss Brenda eventually.
Yeah. Joe, before I let you go, what are your plans for the holidays? Are you doing anything fun?
Yeah, going home to Buffalo and see my family. And yeah, that's it. Then there's New Year's. Very looking forward to counting down from 10.
When you're back home, are you going to have like a watch party because the show will be on while you're there?
I think I kind of dodged the bullet because they're airing the Christmas special along with the first four episodes this Friday night, tomorrow mm-hmm. night, mm-hmm. December 20th.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Friday, December 20th, they're airing the first four episodes and then the Christmas special so people can get caught up. Or then it's kind of on pause until January 2nd. So I might have lucked out. I don't have to watch it at home. Not that it's that bad, but, you know. Yeah, no, I would end up watching it. Yeah, that's fine. I can watch it with my family.
Do you feel like a celebrity in Buffalo at all?
No.
No.
That's nice.
No, I don't feel like a celebrity anywhere. It's, I don't know. It's New York people don't recognize you, and I've got a very, very plain face. So it's like, for the most part, it's, definitely not Buffalo.
All right. Well, we got you this gift you can take home to Buffalo.
Really?
Yeah, this chocolate house for you.
That's for me?
Yeah.
It says general store?
Yeah, it says candy house. Candy store.
How did I get it so bad?
Well, I mean, it's in one color.
That's really nice. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course.
And thank you, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We hope you eat it and enjoy it. I don't know if it's hollow or if it's solid. It's probably hollow.
It's to be determined.
But
it's a solid chocolate house.
That would be incredible.
A brick of chocolate.
Yeah. But I hope you enjoy it and hope you have a wonderful Christmas season.
Yeah, you too.
So the show airs at what time on Friday nights?
It airs at midnight on Friday. So Friday night into Saturday morning, every Friday in January, there'll be new episodes. And I think they put them up online too, mm-hmm. That day and the next day. So you can kind of, watch them for free on adultswim.com.
We
don't have cable.
We implore everyone to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might be free on the Adult Swim app as well. I'm not sure.
They are, actually. Yeah, that's how I watch them.
Yeah. So it feels weird telling you to download a network app, but they're free. Yeah, I don't know. It's free.
When Peacock comes out, I'm going to be pushing that on everybody.
The NBC app?
Yeah, Peacock.
Oh, boy.
I can't believe that's the name, but I can't wait for it to come out. And I'll show my support for my employers.
You have to. You're a foot soldier in the new streaming wars. Yeah,
it's true.
I'm not looking forward to May when they brand us all with peacock tattoos.
It's got to happen.
Yeah. Well, Joe, at the end of every show, we ask our guests to give us 5 stars and a kind review
on iTunes.
On iTunes, and so it would be our honor if you would ask our guests to give us 5 stars.
To like for me to go online and do it.
Do you want me to
ask the guests?
Yeah. Okay. Guests.
Oh, so you refer to your audience as guests?
No, you just misspoke.
Yeah, I misspoke.
Well, God,
it got dark in here. Spooky.
I think it's because
my dead friend Ed.
Ooh.
My gym friend.
He's back.
Yeah.
Oh.
My ghost friend Ed.
No, it would be we would be honored if you would ask our listeners to please give us a 5-star review.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
If you're listening, please give a 5-star review. They've got to get to the top of the iTunes charts.
That's perfect. True. That's true. We do. Joe, thank you so much for being here. Have a very wonderful holiday season.
Thanks, Kate.